everyone. This is Dr. Russ Jones.
And Brad Kennan.
We are wide open. How are you, my friend?
I'm cold.
Cold.
It's freaking May and it's, you know,
we feel like a champion tonight.
We're do what?
You don't feel like a champion tonight?
No, I don't. You know, we were supposed to work yesterday and literally up in Northern Ohio, they got snow and that's just ridiculous. So
yeah, they have snow here in the mountains in West Virginia. I am not for that. I mean, no. Last year, it seemed like we had the same sucky weather and I was caught myself literally every patient, every 5 minutes complaining about the weather. And I thought, you know, I just had to shut up about this. So yesterday it was like every other patient that I would complain about the weather and that I didn't want to live in Michigan. If I wanted to be in Michigan, I'd be in Michigan and I'm not there.
Right.
You know, I'm in West Virginia.
We don't even say that word on this podcast.
So. That's true. Sorry about that.
Yeah. The state up north. Anyway, I got a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
When you were growing up, how much of your food did your family grow on your property?
Well, if you think about this until about, I always tell patients this, until about the 1960s, so really our great grandparents, everyone largely ate organically.
Yeah.
And I can remember my family, of course, you know, you and I both grew up in farm country in Ohio. We had huge gardens. And the family would all come out there and split up the food. And I can remember when I'd be coon hunting with my grandfather in his cellar, he had all this stuff in there. And I would go in there and stuff all these apples in my jeans, usually five or six of them. That's what I was carrying with me when we were coon hunting. You know, of course, we did not know any difference. You know, that's just the way it was for everybody.
Right. Oh, yeah. And I mean, growing up, same way, we had a big garden. I remember growing up as a kid. And my mom used to always tell me that I'd literally just go pull carrots out of the ground and eat them. You know, dirt still on them and everything. So you know, I always liked carrots. But
listen, man, kids would be more healthy if they were dirty, putting mud in their mouth, playing in creeks, not using all this antibacterial stuff that disrupts our endocrine systems. They would be better served to just be out there being kids like they were in the decades past.
I agree with you 1000%. You know, like I said, I remember it was nothing better than getting a summertime big thunderstorm and, you know, going down the creek that's running really high and you're in it and you're swimming in it and you're just having fun and you're got motorcycles and you're dirty and you know the parents want, you know, you just spray yourself off with a hose out in the yard and you know it's the same thing you drink out of, it tastes like plastic, but that was great and we didn't know any better. So
yeah, I mean, and we're all much healthier. I mean, yeah. If you think about some of the diagnoses, like a lot of my patients are diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and of course all the doctors say fat female 40, but you know it's a diagnosis that largely didn't exist, you know, until say in the last decade or two. We have all these autoimmune disorders that people did not have at all in the past. I think it's largely related to, you know, food allergies. It's related to the processing of our foods, the artificial ingredients that are in them. We need to do better.
Well, what was that? I read, I saw an article where in England, a McDonald's French fry has 6 ingredients in it. In the United States, it has 19.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like the artificial sweeteners, you know, NutraSweet failed 29 times before it was passed on the 30th time. I mean, many of the things that people are using are just, you know, not healthy in any way. I mean, we legitimately need to eat real food.
Right. And people think that, oh, I'm drinking a zero sugar Coke. Well, it's not zero sugar. It's got artificial sweetener in it, which is probably worse for you than real sugar or something of that sort. So
it is worse for you. And at least with real sugar, your body can process it, but you know, we still want to avoid it as much as we can. But even when you're using the zero sugars, it's still so sweet that it causes your body to, your pancreas to secrete insulin to lower your blood sugar. You know, and a lot of the patients, you can get them down to say within 10 or 15 pounds of their ideal body weight. But if they're using some type of diet pop, then, you know, you can't do it. Now, I don't think that everybody can be perfect. I just try to do better than most everybody else, right? So if the average guy is going to live to be 80, you know, then I'm going to try to be 20% better than that and have a higher functioning level.
Okay. 96, here you come anyway.
Yeah. So we're together this weekend, the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. I don't want you, like, if I, you know, hating on any of my meals here either, okay?
Yeah, whatever. Okay. This is the time you're allowed to cheat, remember?
Oh, it is? Okay. Well, yeah, I didn't know that.
I've seen you eat bread. And yeah. All right. So we're going to bring our guest on.
Okay.
He is Jim Gale of the Food Forest Abundance. So
hi, Jim.
This man not only promotes freedom of food, but freedom of everything.
Everything.
And as you know, like I know, I love the government and I wish they were in our business a little bit more every day.
Why? Because they do such an efficient job at everything that they do.
Correct.
They do it so well.
Right. And they generally have the smartest people in government running things. So,
wow. And the most ethical.
Yes. Yeah.
That's one of the qualifications, moral, ethical leader, trendsetter.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you can see it. Just turn on the news.
Yeah. What is it? The humans are the only animals or mammals that let the dumbest and weakest people lead us. Yeah. So if we were a pack of wolves, these guys would be in the back, or probably they wouldn't be in the pack anymore because we.
And is it all by design? That's the question I've been asking for 16 years.
You know, it absolutely when I first
learned what was going on in the world, I had my first two daughters, and I also learned a science called permaculture. Permaculture stands for permanent agriculture. And it within the permaculture science is the answer to mass extinction and deforestation and cancer and diabetes and heart disease, the answer to world hunger and the answer to tyranny. Because everything we're experiencing now is part of a designed strategy to enslave humanity.
All humanity?
Of course. This whole thing is global. I was just talking to my buddy in Hong Kong. It's the same thing everywhere in the world now. Now, it never used to be this everywhere, this ubiquitous. But this comes from 400 years ago when I believe it was Mayor Rothschild said that he's going to spread his kids over the corners of the earth and control the world's currency. And then a couple hundred years later, one of his great-great-great-grandkids said, I care not which puppet sits on the throne of England when I control its currency. And then back 50 years ago, Henry Kissinger, a descendant of this insane system, said, if you want to control people, control food. So before, food was decentralized. Everybody grew food on their land because that was the logical thing to do. Now, basically, one corporation named BlackRock, right? BlackRock is not only the name of the entity that is the parasite of all parasites on our planet, run by a computer named Aladdin, but it's the intention of the entity. So the bad news is the food has been weaponized. The good news is it's very easy to grow our own food.
So that's funny because a lot of kids today don't even know who the Rothschilds are. You know, I bring it up to some younger generation. I'm like, well, the Rothschilds, well, who's that? I'm like, you know, they're literally the richest family in the world. No, they're not. Bill Gates is, or Elon Musk is. No, they're not. These people are so far above what you can even understand and think. Don't even go there. So, you know, you talk about COVID, or I'm sorry, you're not allowed to talk about that. You talk about pharmaceutical companies and vaccines that are out there. And, you know, those companies reap, what do they make, $100 billion or something off the vaccine? And all that is controlled by people that our younger generation have no idea who they are because they're not on Twitter. They're not on Instagram every day posting shorts. You know, they're hidden in the shadows. And, you know, I saw this the other day, Greta Thunberg, or, you know, the wacky autistic kook chick. She's a relative of the Rothschilds.
Yep.
And she is a setup from the word go. Yeah. She's not just some person that says, I'm going to stand up for global blah, blah, blah. No, you are a setup. You are a puppet to the people behind the screen.
100%. So anyway. They're all puppets. Everybody we see in Hollyweird and on CNN and Fox, they're all puppets to some degree. Right. Yeah. And then you got Tucker Carlson being fired. You know, you look at all this stuff, and when you step back from it and you look at the whole thing as a theater, My question, my obsessive question for the last 16 years has been, how do we catalyze a shift in awareness that leads to mass adoption of faith and courage and of a freedom mindset? And it comes down to one simple thing. In fact, this was a Bill Mollison quote that changed my life about 15 years ago. Though the problems of our world are increasingly complex, the solutions remain embarrassingly simple. The solutions is when we take the poisons out and grow food instead of lawn. That's that simple. When we take the poisons out and grow food instead of half of our lawn, we change the world.
So let's say, you know, I got an acre or whatever it is. You know, I got a half acre, I got an acre, which yeah. I got a little more than that. But the problem is my hill's on a slant. So I don't have a really, the best place I have to grow anything would be at the bottom. But when we get a lot of rain, my creek will flood and it'll wash it all out. So I can't put it down there. So anyway, let's say I got a little bit of area. How big of an area do I need to feed myself, my wife? You know, I have a son and his wife live, you know, 15 minutes away, enough food at least to help us not go to the grocery store and buy that crap that they have every day.
So there are people in the world now feeding their family on a 10th of an acre. Okay. A quarter acre is great. A quarter acre of usable land, and you can have a little fish pond. You can have some chickens. You can have some rabbits. And then you can have 100 different types of edible perennial plants, plus some annuals. Now, the difference and the distinction is very important. A perennial is something that you plant once and it continues to grow for generations, sometimes even thousands of years. An annual, which, by the way, annuals are new to humanity just in the last couple hundred years. An annual is something you plant and then you take the seeds after harvest and you replant and you keep having to plant the new seeds.
Now, Monsanto has actually made that illegal for farmers to do that, correct?
With their seeds, yes. They have sued neighboring farmers because their seeds have blown over and somehow mixed with their seeds, and they tested the corn to find the genetic strain. And now this is the bad news is Monsanto sued farmers and the farmers used to lose. Now farmers are suing Monsanto because Monsanto's crops are infiltrating their fields and they don't want them to. And now Monsanto's losing some lawsuits.
Good. That's good. Yeah. All right. So, okay, let's go ahead. So I was just, you know, so now we're collecting these seeds at the end of the season to grow our crop for next year.
Heirloom seeds.
Correct. Yeah. So let's start from there.
Well, plant all perennials, right? Like when I walk outside of my house at Galt's Landing after John Galt from Atlas Shrugged, when I walk out, there's 230 different types of food growing on our property, and it's less maintenance. In fact, the only thing we've done in the last 13 months, because we started with sand 13 months ago, and
what part of the country are you in?
In Florida.
Okay. All right.
And the only thing we've done is trim the pathway because the perennial peanut, which fixes nitrogen in the soil, was taken over the pathway. We've done no weeding or no maintenance in 13 months, and we have an epic food forest.
So let me ask you this, Jim. How are you going to, have you considered how you're going to protect your land from the people that haven't prepared as well as you?
Yes, that is a great question. So the best way, when I bring people to the property, which they come sometimes hundreds a week, I tell them that food security, if we were the only ones with an abundance of food and the economy fails, would that be food security? And they immediately say no, because they recognize what's going to happen. So food security is when we have enough food and our neighbors also have enough food. So that's exactly what our business model is to help create these food production systems all over the world. And then each one of them becomes a nursery, so all of their neighbors get inspired and also grow food. And when we do this at scale, which is happening, then we change the world.
Okay, so how far do you live from a large city?
I live about an hour from Orlando.
Okay, so
which direction? No, seriously. In my job, the reason I'm asking is in my job, I put 1,100 miles of cable in Florida from
St. Cloud, Florida.
I went from Jacksonville to Melbourne to Orlando back to Jacksonville.
Melbourne, and 45 minutes from Melbourne.
Okay, so
you're there. You're growing your stuff. Some of your neighbors are growing your stuff, but the people in the city are not.
Yeah.
So they start, you know, after a couple of weeks, you know, of course, there's no refrigeration. It's gone. People are walking out. I mean, we talked about this with G. Hoff here a few weeks ago, you know, after a pulse type thing. And so people are going out to the countryside. They're going to get food from people that produced it, like you.
Yeah.
So how do you keep those people from, you know,
layers of security and logic, and time is of the essence. So the number one way to secure our community is by continuously helping people grow food. So we're putting food forests all over the place throughout Orlando right now. We're going into people's yards and backyards, and we're installing edible landscapes. And there are a few types of crops like sweet potatoes and papaya and yuca and a few perennial spinaches that can propagate incredibly easily. And they can become the foundation of food self-reliance. So we're growing a ton of that stuff so we can have a lot of excess to share when the shit hits the fan.
So you're in Florida. What about, you know, we're, you know, Russ is in West Virginia. I'm in Ohio. You know, like I said, it's the weather today, yesterday and today, it was 30 some degrees, just brutal. Just, you know, it's supposed to be in the 70s and 80s next week. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, we literally go from winter to summer here. We don't ever have a spring.
Winter to mosquito season.
Oh, absolutely. And then, so, you know, for us, or, you know, half the country that we're up in this northern climate or more northern climate, you know, do you have those perennials that we can grow? You know, yes. Is that in your plan?
It is absolutely in our plan. In the permaculture design science, the first thing you consider is zone. So two stories, one real quick. My buddy in northern Minnesota off the tip of Lake Superior, the southern tip, he has 300 different species of edible and medicinal plants growing in his epic food forest. It's about maybe 6 years old. And check this out. The wind, the rain, and the birds will come into his food forest. And he has done a survey outside of his property. He estimates that over 100,000 food-producing plants, perennials, have been germinated because of his food forest. Right. So in a case like that, you can't walk outside in January and harvest food, but you can store an amazing amount of food come September, October. Like my mom, she grew up in southern Minnesota, Medelia, and she grew up 100% off grid, and they grew 100% of their own food.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I wonder what percent of the people that are up there or nationally are raising their own food. Do you have an idea of the percentage?
Well, I know it's a lot of farmland up there, but now it's been all infiltrated by monocultures, which are one type of crop over a large area. That's completely unnatural. Farmers that do this type of diverse edible landscaping, they can make more money on 2 acres than they can on 100 acres if they do it right.
So what do you think the amount of people, the percentage of people who say that have gardens or that are doing something similar to you across the nation would be? Like 1%?
I wouldn't say it's quite 1% yet, which points to the fact that this is the biggest opportunity in the history of humanity. It's like somebody going to Africa and saying they don't have shoes, and somebody says, oh, we can't sell shoes here. And somebody else says, they don't have shoes. We can sell a lot of shoes here, right? This is the transformation that if we make this transformation, we heal the world. If we don't, we're done.
Shit. Sorry. Now, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, I live kind of out in the outside of a major city, outside of a small city. I got a couple acres. My neighbor's got 30 acres or 40 acres. You know, my other neighbor's got 2 acres. You know, we have farms and stuff out here, but I think a lot of, some of them have their their guards. Some of them don't. You know, a lot of the lots maybe are 1.5, 2 acres, which I don't see gardens on them. Yeah. Do you have a program or something? You know, it'd be great to be able to print something out, go to my neighbor, say, hey, I know you, and here's something we can do together. But then I have all these other people that I say, you know, I don't know you guys. I believe in, I love neighbors, but not really. I like being by myself. Yeah. So, but that doesn't mean I'm unfriendly. But say, hey, guys, you know, here's something maybe we need to get together as a group of people in an area, and we're going to do some things to help prepare ourselves for, you know, that EMP that goes off and we're all screwed.
What you're talking about is one of the most important elements that people should be considering right now, is to create their own self-reliant systems and then inspire their neighbors to do the same. Create local communities. And that's what we've done here. In fact, anybody listening, and of course you guys, if you'd ever like to come visit our place in St. Cloud and feel it, that's when people's minds get blown. Because when they hear about a food forest or they see videos, they think, I can't do it. Well, that's just a bunch of BS. It's actually much easier to manage and to steward a permaculture edible landscape, and then to invite the community to see it. And then you'll have, it's like a nursery. It's like growing food during a food supply chain collapse is a pretty good idea.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that really intrigues me, because, you know, I don't think I can do it all on my own. But like I said, my neighbors got cattle. My neighbors have chickens, you know, but they're older. You know, he's retired, and, you know, she's getting a little older. So if there's something we could do to help them out, you know, reap the benefits of that. You know, if we could do something for them, they could do something for us. Then we go to the next neighbor and say, well, you got some land, you know, you do something. So we don't have to do it on our own.
Yes. That's key. Bring community together right now. Because I've been studying this for a long time. There are so many things happening with the food supply chain. It's already poisonous. It's already been destroyed, but a lot of the repercussions have not been felt yet by the majority of people. There have been hundreds of food supply and distribution centers that have been destroyed in the last few years. A bunch of lumber places. The supply chain is being attacked because that's the method. That's the weapon. Food, what do they say? The army fights on its stomach.
Yeah.
Well, we are humanity. We are the army. And when we grow food, we take out that critical element. We take that power away from them and put it back in our own hands.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're 9 meals away from a riot, straight up.
Yeah.
Jim, is there other things that you do in terms of setting up supplies that you have in your house or whatever to prepare you for something to happen aside from the food thing?
Yes, we are in a great location at the end of a 5-mile road. We've got a 400-acre private lake to our west. We've got a mile-long paved runway to our east, and all surrounded by nature. So there's one way in, unless people are going to be going through the forests. And we've hired security consultants. And our main security is by serving our neighbors. In fact, this gets into the strategy where we declare ourselves free. We do not pay any slave taxes. We do not ask the government for permission to do anything. We are here to steward the land and to serve our community to the max. And then we believe that that will be the ultimate protection.
Okay. So how many people do you think that you have helped organize or do their own thing?
So we launched with the help of Dell Big Tree about 2 years ago, and we are now helping people grow food in 53 countries and 50 U.S. states.
Dale Big Tree, didn't he have a weekly thing on, wasn't it?
He's got the high wire. Yeah, he has about 20 million, an audience of 20. He's a really good figure, and mostly medical freedom, but he does all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we had a sister company, and the last company I worked for, a sister company did online. It was like an OTT product. So basically, he had his own channel, High Wire channel on Roku. We actually were the back end system that ran his channel, so we knew him.
Oh, cool.
So, great but guy. I didn't know he was that big. I knew he was pretty big. And I know that we looked at the data and YouTube was really jamming him on his advertising. And yeah, there's a whole nother story about that. You know, when he flipped from YouTube to us and it crashed our system, we couldn't figure out why. And literally we had calculated, you know, hey, you know, he's saying I'm getting 200,000 viewers on YouTube, you know, so we set it up for 400,000. And it turns out he was getting like 800,000 viewers on YouTube, and YouTube just wasn't telling him.
Awesome.
So, or not YouTube. It was some other platform, but it wasn't YouTube.
They kicked me off YouTube long time
ago. I know. That's why Brad's trying to get us kicked off again.
We've already been grounded once. I'm not saying it's true or not. I'm just saying that's, you know, theoretically, that was what I was told by our back-end engineers. But
right.
So, Jim, is there other components of this, like medicine, you know what I mean? Like, is it all inclusive or is it just strictly concentrating on the food type thing?
It's, well, permaculture is a holistic design science. So we engage all of the pillars and energy systems of our society. For instance, I've put a message for several very prominent politicians, Tucker, Kennedy, and DeSantis and others, and Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan. Tucker said he wanted to interview me right before he got fired. My point is I call them out. I invite them is a better way to put it. For instance, I'll give you DeSantis, Ron DeSantis. If he spent 5% of the Florida annual budget on putting in these food production systems, 5% over 4 years of $92 billion would be about $18 billion. $18 billion would result in $1 million perennial food forests. That would change the landscape of Florida, making Florida the healthiest, most food self-reliant state and community in the world. And it would also become then the model community that other communities would follow. So I'm telling all the politicians and pundits and people running for office out there, if you want to run on a campaign strategy of the ethical use of our resources, the strategic use of our resources, come talk to me because we'll help you win every ethical vote.
The problem is the ethical votes will not outweigh the unethical votes, and therefore they won't get their advertising and their campaign dollars from the large farm, you know, the large corporations that supply us with the poisons that we see every day in the grocery store.
I think you're absolutely right for a lot of reasons, because the system's a scam. But here's the thing, is when the campaign itself is focused on such a message, it will reach a lot of people. And that's the key. This is not a government solution. I don't believe in government for anything. This is a people up solution. This is a ground up solution. But when we call out government officials in this strategic way, the people go, hey, what about that?
So, two questions. One is, I know you don't believe in government for anything, but you do want to use 5% of Florida's budget for implementing the gardens. And secondly, so how does it work? I mean, like, I admire what you're saying and I think it's cool, but like, so does anybody can go to the garden and get what they need, or how exactly does that work?
So first of all, I don't believe in taxation, so I don't believe there should be anything like that. But I'm simply making a point. If they campaigned on this strategy, then the result would be this. Right. And here's how it works. Like, you go into a park right now and you've got a bunch of ornamental plants. Ornamentals are plants that might look good, but they don't provide food. If all we did were take out the ornamental bushes and trees and vines and replace them with edible, right? It's just as much maintenance to take care of an avocado tree as it is to take care of an oak tree. But the difference is avocados.
Right. And so you would just have this abundance of food everywhere, and then people would just eat on it as they need. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. It would solve the health issues and the food issues. It would make food virtually free. Food should be, and I don't mean like somebody else gets it and then I have to give up some of my food. I just mean that if we simply let nature do its thing, then food will just be everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an interesting concept. I mean, I think it's cool. I mean, certainly much healthier and more reasonable than what we're doing now. I mean, a lot of the population now, like Brad, what'd you say, 9 meals, Brad, or something?
Nine meals.
9 meals. I mean, I could see, you know, people would be in trouble instantly. I mean, I remember when, you know, when we were having hurricanes or other natural disasters, the government says, you know, worst case, you should be able to be on your own for what, 5 to 7 days, you know, provide your own food or whatever that happens to be. And I doubt there's a very high percentage of people in the country that could do that. Probably the rural people would be okay and the farming communities would be okay, but the city people would be rioting probably, you know, within a day or two.
Think about where even someone that lives in an apartment, where are they going to store 7 days worth of food besides a bag or two of rice, maybe, you know, that's about it. And even if they were thinking that far ahead, which a lot of people aren't even thinking that far ahead. They're thinking, well, I got a case of pop and, you know, I got some pancake mix or, you know, I can just throw this in the microwave. Well, if you don't have a microwave, what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to heat your, the gas doesn't work. Your stove doesn't work. What are you going to do, people?
And so it's happened throughout history many times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, when the Russians pulled out of Cuba, the Cubans were starving. In 1989, Russian subsidies ended overnight. And so what happened to the Cuban people? They became the most food self-reliant country in the world within 10 years.
Wow.
Because there was no choice.
Yeah, it had to happen. Now, if it cuts off as quickly as it could cut off next week or next year or whenever, then it is going to be mass chaos. And the people in the cities, and they're going to be ready for this. This is going to be a designed implosion and a systemic collapse. And then they're going to be there with their Soylent Green and their poisonous food. And they're going to probably have the CBDCs ready. And they'll say, okay, you get, here's your 1500 calories of shit food that you can have today, as long as you do these particular things that we tell you to do.
You're talking about enslavement.
Absolutely.
We are already slaves.
I don't even trust the government to come into my neighborhood or my area and just say, hey, we're going to provide you with anything whatsoever. I don't believe they can do it. I don't believe they have enough manpower. You know, we've seen it in the past. And like I said, we've talked to other people on this subject. There's not enough military and police out there. Those police are going to go back to their homes and they're going to manage their home life because they have wife and kids and they're good family people. You know, the firefighters, they can only do so much. You know, it's good. The system's going to be overloaded too quick. They're going to throw up their hands and they're going to go home.
Yeah.
The military is not going to come out where I'm at. There's not enough military people to stop anything. You know, we're in the Midwest. We're outside a large city. We don't have any large military bases here. Where are the people going to come from? They're not going to call up the reserves because the reservists are going to go, you know what? Screw you. I'm not going, especially in the current administration and the way they treat the military and how they treat the military establishment currently and the leadership in the military. A lot of the military people, I do believe, don't believe that they want to be there anyway, and they're getting wrong directions. So I think there's something like isn't there a saying about, you know, taking a wrong or a order that's, you know, wrong is not actually right or something of that sort. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, you're right. We're going to be on our own anyway.
Yeah. I totally think we are. There's going to be a certain point where they want to keep a certain amount of people to do their slave work. You know, Goethe said, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. And when I first heard that, I got a little bit agitated. It was about 10 years ago. I said, I'm not a slave. I can do whatever I want. And the fella said, really? Well, what happens if you make money? What happens to 30, 40% of the money you make? I said, well, it's taxes. And he said, is that voluntary or is it forced? And instantly I'm like, oh my God, right? We are slaves.
And it's not, and it's not even 30 or 40%. It's 30% of what you make. Then I go buy a tube of toothpaste and I get taxed on it. Then that guy who did that paid taxes on that to get into, you know, the elements of the country. So if you look at true taxation in the country, we're probably at 60%.
Yes. And it's a parasite. It's sucking the energy out of humanity. The system that nature designed or God designed, right? Whatever perspective you come from, to me, it's the same thing. That system is infinitely abundant. That's the good news. The good news is once we make this shift by taking the poisons out and growing food instead of lawns, the lawn is the foundation of our enslavement. Okay. When we take that out and grow food, we're set.
Okay, so I got some land. I want to start. I got a quarter acre out here. I'm going to start tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do I go out and till up my land? So I don't have a tiller, so I got to find that.
Nope.
You know, what is this process that we have to go through? Am I going to go plant bushes? Am I going to go plant some stuff around my house? Am I going to go create, you know, back in the day, you know, we had to go get a tiller and we had horses. So we spread manure over our garden all fall and winter. So in the summertime or the spring, we till it up and we grew giant tomatoes and stuff because we had all this natural fertilizer.
Yeah.
But I don't have that stuff. You know, that was what I used to have growing up. I don't have that now. I live, you know, I don't want to put chemicals on it. I don't want to have to go up and get bags of fertilizer and stuff to put on it. And I hate buying, you know, hey, I'm going to go buy some dirt with cow crap in it. That's really expensive because they think that stuff's really expensive now. Yeah. So what do I do? How do I get started?
Well, there's two ways to get started. If you want to do it yourself, you can go on YouTube and can look up permaculture and you can spend years learning how to put guilds together and the sun paths and the wind and the water, or you can hire a permaculturalist to do a design for you. The design is an incredibly detailed document that lays out the layers of mulch and soil, the layers of compost tea and different additives, which are very easy to add once you know how and when. And then you can, it'll design in the guilds. Now, a guild is a community of plants that support each other. So in a guild, you've got your primary food producing fruit or nut tree. And then for a ground cover, you might have some pigeon pea or perennial peanut or sunshine mimosa. And these plants actually fix nitrogen in the soil. And then you'll want a few flowers around the guild because the flowers attract the butterflies and the bees for pollination. And then you'll want maybe some strawberries and raspberries and blueberries and blackberries around the guild for extra understory food production. And then you'll have your primary fruit tree. A design for a quarter acre costs about $1,200. And once you have that in hand, then you can, if you know how to use a shovel, you can put it in, or you can hire a team to install it.
Isn't hiring a team, isn't that going against everything that we thought about from the beginning? You know,
well, it depends if you want to shovel mulch.
Right. I mean, I guess if we're going to go this far, we might as well shovel our own stuff, right?
Totally cool. Shovel mulch. Mulch is a bitch, but you can shovel as much mulch as you want. It's a good workout.
Right, exactly.
So let me ask you this, along the same lines, but I'm just curious about your thoughts on the GMO and the pesticides that we're seeing, you know, in commonly, and of course, in the large cultural, or not cultural, but the large corporate type entities using most of the land.
It's horrible. I mean, it's poison. It is destroying and mining and our soil. It's going into our aquifers. It's going into our guts and our brains and our bodies. The disease trends are off the charts. The disease trends are off the charts. Cancer, diabetes, heart disease. All of this comes from the toxins that we ingest, both in our mouths and in our minds, right? CNN and a lot of Fox News and a lot of shows that we watch on the BlackRock controlled media, they're the ultimate toxin. The number one toxin is fear, right? So the first thing we do is step out of fear into faith and courage, into joy and service and love. And then we, right there, we've won a big part of the battle. And then we take the toxins out of our food as well.
Are you doing this full time? You know what I mean? Like between your lecturing and appearances and whatnot.
Yeah, we intend to change the world because why not? Right? Napoleon Hill, who wrote the book Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
He deducted after studying the most successful manifestors in history that whatever the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. Well, we know that we are on the path to catalyzing a shift that leads to mass adoption of this because it's the most logical thing we could ever do.
Are you getting any support from, you know, government agencies or entities?
Well, that's a good question. We just had the Florida Department of Corrections come to Gulf's Landing and they're blown away. And now we're going to do food forest installations, very strategic ones, no trees, unfortunately, but plants that cannot be used as weapons. We're going to be installing them in prisons. And here's the thing, they've done this before. They did a study in California where they had a gardening program for 3 years. The recidivism rate went from over 60% to under 10% for the inmates that participated for 3 years or more. That's a world-changing statistic.
Any reason why?
Yes, because there's something about the, first of all, they're learning a skill, how to grow things. And then there's also something very divine about working with your hands in the soil and working with nature. It somehow changes who these folks are.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was curious about is I remember when I was doing some of my anti-aging seminars that there was these studies showing that the omega ratios in society, you know, it's supposed to be ideally 2-1, but most of society is 20-1 or 30-1. And the serial killers would be like 100-1 or, you know, even higher than that sometimes. The jail population would be in the middle there somewhere. So when you were saying that, I was wondering whether the reduction would be the fact that for the first time that they were eating more quality foods that were, you know, somehow affecting their chemicals.
Yes. Yes, that would absolutely be a part of it. When we eat nutritious foods, we can think and feel better. And when we think and feel better, we realize that harming people is stupid.
Well, I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
Right?
And so what's the biggest obstacle that you've came up against?
The biggest obstacle is people don't believe it's possible. And to solve that obstacle, which has taken me, I've been obsessed for 16 years about this. And for 14 or 13 years, people are like, yeah. The last 3 years, it's been like, actually 2 years, it's just been like a rocket launch because now people see the need. So that's the number one thing is to be aware that there's a need to change things. And then two, be empowered by seeing it and feeling it. You know, one of the Tesla quotes comes up. He said, if you want to find the secrets to the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. But don't think, feel, experience in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And when you're standing in a living food forest with butterflies and birds everywhere and all the sights and sounds and colors and smells and tastes, something happens and they get inspired and then they go home and plant food.
Yeah, I can see where that could be inspiring, like you were saying, with the inmates. I mean, the cynical side of me sees the part of our society that doesn't really want to participate in things, would rather somebody else grow things from them, and they're just entitled to, you know, something. I mean, maybe as this grows, it becomes more popular that maybe people will see the benefits of it and, you know, maybe they'll start to enjoy it. I don't know. I hope that I probably shouldn't be so cynical.
Well, no, that's okay. It's a cynical world and there's so many reasons to be cynical because there's so much BS out there. But that's the fun part is if you come to my place, and I hope you do, and you walk around, you will realize that it's the best thing for you to do for yourself and your family. It's a lazy man's gardening because I don't have to do anything. I just walk outside and there's food everywhere.
Well, I'm going to make a trip to Melbourne at some point here in the next probably couple months. And I will make it I'll make sure that I give you a contact you and I want to come out and see this thing because, you know, I have some property out here. I'm thinking in my head that, man, I could really give up some of that land over there because I really don't want to mow it anyway. So if I give it up and I start growing something on it, you know, that's beneficial. I can still have a decent yard for the dogs to play in, and I can have this other part of the yard that I can turn into this food forest. And maybe I get with my neighbor, and, you know, maybe at the beginning of the year we buy a couple cattle and we help feed them, and yeah. You know,
so that's awesome.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, all these people buy these bug out kits, you know, and they have these, you know, 40 different plants with 1,000 seeds and all this other stuff. You know, I mean, there's all different sizes and whatnot. It makes me wonder whether or not people shouldn't be actually outside planting those that they buy, rather than just storing them somewhere for D-Day or EMP Day or whatever the day is.
Well, I mean, think about if the EMP doesn't hit in the spring. You know, let's say it hits in the fall and there is no food, you have winter, then you have, you know, what are you going to do with you're not going to do anything with your stuff.
That's the scenario that it seems to be possible. They do it in the fall and then people won't have energy. They won't have food. It could be one long cold winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of scary, but you know, I see that there are other solutions out there, and you know, that solution, maybe, you know, it's not, like Russ saying, it's not going to calling up 1-800, you know, food supply and getting some of these buckets of 25-year shelf life of food. You know, have enough maybe to get you through that 3 or 4 months or whatever that is, or 6 months, even if that's pot, you know, if you can afford that and you can have that, but have that ability to have those perennials that you're going to grow. And, you know, when you mention tree tells me that it's going to take a while to grow. So I'm going to have to start now.
Yeah. That's the truth. It takes a couple years. It really takes about 4 to 5 years for a food forest to be in full fruition. But you could start getting some food out of it, especially the annuals and the sweet potatoes and some other things within 3 to 6 months. But it does take time.
Okay. So, Jim, how long do you think that, on a guess, that if something happened today, or if you just decide that you're going on your own today, how much food do you think, could you sustain yourself year round at this point right now? Or how long do you think that you could go?
We could sustain multiple families right now. And we started planting about 18 months ago. We dug a pond. We put fish in the pond. We have chickens, which produce a dozen eggs a day. We've got a little strip where we've got 11 cows. And then we've got all the food productions, or the plants. So we've got a diversity. We put beehives in 6 months ago. We've got over 30 pounds of honey in 6 months. I've never done bees before. I've never done cows before. It's easier than most people think. And yes, there can be problems, no doubt about it. But we learn by doing it. So that's what I suggest, is everybody out there, go plant some seeds. Go start doing it. And then the answers are all on social media. So if I have a problem with one of my plants, I'll take a picture of it. I'll put it on our Food Forest Abundance Telegram page, and I'll say, what's up with this plant? And I'll get like 5 answers of how to fix it.
And I'm sure you'll get 10 answers about how to shove it somewhere where the sun don't shine, and, you know, and something like that. So, because people,
it's a good group.
Yeah. Okay. As long as you can limit who you're asking questions to, I guess. So,
I mean, I think that the imperative thing is that it has to be large and it has to be spread all over the country. Cause if it's not, I can see the forces to be, if something would happen, coming in and just try to take over things for the good of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could happen, but we have one choice. There's not even 2 choices. I'd rather, live on my feet and die on my, what is that darn quote? Anyway, I'm a free man. That's it. And I'm not going to comply anymore.
Okay.
I would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yes. That's the one.
I agree. And, you know, like I said, I would love to have guns, but I'm anti-gun. I sold all my guns, and the ones I didn't sell, I lost in a boating accident. So I don't have any to protect anything. So anyway,
that's right. Jim, so, listen, I mean, we really appreciate you being on. I love just getting to hear someone that's so passionate about stuff. There's just not enough passionate people in our country. And gosh, I admire you so much and what you're trying to do for people. And I wish there was more people out there like you.
Yep. And
thank
I definitely,
you guys both so much.
And I definitely want to make a trip down to St. Cloud, Florida, and see what you got. And maybe, you know, I'm going to talk to maybe get with some of my neighbors and say, hey, you know, we're maybe going to hit a trying time here. Maybe we need to start doing something together as a community. We all have some land. Thank goodness we're out here kind of in the middle of nowhere. And we have a great resource that maybe we're not using to its potential. And maybe we need to start changing that. So
you nailed it.
How can people get a hold of you? How can they reach out or see what you're doing?
So our Telegram is awesome. It's Food Forest Abundance on Telegram. Our website is foodforestabundance.com. And Galt's Landing, it's galtswalks.com. We have Airbnbs, and we invite people from all over the world to come in and experience what life is like completely off the grid. And guess what? It's beautiful.
That sounds like a good time, actually.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate your time.
Yes. Thanks, guys. Have a good day, everybody.
All right. Bye. Well,
what a passionate man.
He is. And he's got some great ideas. And, you know, it's more than, you know, I think going out and planting 10 rows of corn and some tomatoes and some potatoes and some green beans and some peppers, you know, it's more of a, I like the idea of a perennial food forest that you grow on your property and it maintains itself. That's something I think I'm going to look into a little bit more.
You know, I think if the world had 10 Jim Gales instead of 10 politicians, that we would have a lot more in the world.
Absolutely. But you know how that goes. The Jim Gales of the world, we actually are, you know, he's a guy that wants to actually improve things and not just do things for himself. So he'll never be in politics.
Right.
So that's what it is, man. All right.
Like, subscribe, thebigfootdoc.com. What's our email? I know you sent me a couple emails this week.
Wideopenresearch@gmail.com. And I've actually got that added to my daily lookup of all my email accounts. So if you'd send one, I know I got some emails earlier and I sat on them for about 2 weeks before I got in there and got them out. So that does not happen anymore. So if you email us, you know, with stories, encounters, things like that, we'll get right back to you. Wide Open Research on Instagram, the Bigfoot Doc on Twitter. All that kind of stuff. So
Brad and I are going to be together next week at the, it's later this week at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. So we are going to probably do some type of live show while we're up there and maybe do an interview or two up there. So we're excited about that.
Yep.
Taking my calendar up there to fill in some people.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have a good time.
All right. Well, thanks everybody. I appreciate you.
All right. Are we done? We out of here?
We're out of here. Good to see you, my friend.
Later.